Sharing cabs with strangers, you know, that is a strange idea in New York City. We're outmaneuvering the person waving down the same cab. It's an art form. But a new study spearheaded by researchers at MIT's Sensible City Lab recommends sharing a cab to dramatically reduce the length of trips and even the number of the cabs on the road in the city. And while the math is impressive, how exactly would this work in real life? Can this type of transit catch on as widely as the study suggests, especially with the advent of share ride services like Uberpool, Lyft Line, and Bandwagon? And even if it does, how would you convince time-starved business people to share a cab where every traffic minute counts? Joining me now to see how these mathematical probabilities might play out in real life is Stephen Strogatz, professor of applied math at Cornell University, which is where he joins us from today. Welcome back to the program, Steve.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Tell us about this data set. What was the data set used for this study?
It's a data set of about 170 million trips that were taken in New York City in 2011, taxi trips. Under the era of Michael Bloomberg, everything was about big data, including keeping track of, you know, using GPS of all the pickups and drop-offs at what times and locations.
And the question that you and your MIT researchers were trying to answer was?
Well, at first it was just to understand a little bit about the pulse of the city, that is where were cabs going and coming from. But it raised this very natural question of how much could you save in terms of money and traffic and pollution if people did share cabs.
So how do you sift through all this data? I mean, was there a framework? You had to design an algorithm or something?
Yes. That is, if you ask this question of, like, what's the best possible improvement we could get if people shared cabs, that's, you know, with a data set of that size, it's tricky to think about it, especially if you imagine that these cabs are not only driving around in space, but in time. I mean, it's no good if two cabs are near each other, but one's an hour later. So it's just an enormously complicated computer science problem. But my colleagues at MIT figured out this nice way to reduce it to a network problem that could be solved with essentially off-the-shelf techniques of computer science.
Mm-hmm. Were there any parameters in which the cabs could be shared, like wait time, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, you do have to think about that a lot. Like you mentioned earlier that business people might be in a rush and they're not going to want to be delayed by, say, 10 minutes to share a ride with somebody else. So that's one parameter that we consider. What is the maximum delay that both riders who are sharing the cab would tolerate, that is compared to what the length of the trip would be if they took it on their own? And so we can adjust that. That's something that psychologists have to figure out. Are people content to be late by 3 minutes if it means it's only going to cost them half as much or what? So we use numbers like 3 minutes. The longest delay we ever considered was 5 minutes.
It's hard to imagine combining this many cab rides without something like an app. So we talked to David Mafuda. He is CEO of Bandwagon. And that's an app that's already helping strangers share taxis in New York. His company was even mentioned in the PNAS study. And here's what he had to say.
With the ubiquity and advent of mobile computing, we're in a place where we can basically repurpose cars and roads and build them around the idea of moving populations instead of individuals.
You know, but when we tried this out, we tested out the app to see if it really worked. We sent two of our Science Friday producers to try to find rides from Midtown Manhattan yesterday using the Bandwagon app, and the app could not find another rider to match with them. Actually, the app only found our two riders. Is this, Stephen? This is, I guess you have to wait for a critical mass of people using the app, right?
Yes, that's right. So the amount of time that you'd spend waiting will depend on how many other people are participating, and there may not even be a sharing opportunity, as your producers found out. So, yes, you'd want a critical mass of people doing it, but the data suggested that at least in 2011, if any, like if you imagine that the technology existed at that time and people would request shared rides, everybody would have had about 100 opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
That is, anyone asking would have not come up empty. They would have had 100 possibilities, and the algorithm that we figured out would find the best possible match.
Mm-hmm. So we do need to give this a little more time, is what you're saying, to see if it would really work before you can judge.
Well, yeah, if we even want to do it, I think we should be honest about this, that there are possibilities of many unintended consequences. Like, after all, we already have very green technology in subways and buses.
Right.
And if we start getting more people sharing cabs, if that undercuts the taxi – sorry, if it undercuts the subway or other mass transit system, that may end up making things worse, not to mention that we could be putting a lot of cab drivers out of business.
No kidding. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking with Steve Strogatz, professor of applied math at Cornell University. And you know, for someone who fights for cabs on the streets of New York all the time, and it really is an art form to try to get one, not to mention being a rude form of art, how do we know that people, you know, are going to want to take a cab that makes a couple of stops? If they're rushing to get someplace, we don't know if that model is going to work, do we?
Mm-hmm. That's true. There's a little bit of risk involved. There are times, though, I mean, David Mafuda may have said this to you when you spoke to him, that especially late at night, if you're waiting at the airport and trying to get back to the city, it may turn out to save you time to share with someone.
Yeah. Has anybody studied, you mentioned the downside of this, and has anybody studied, for example, some of the newer services like Uber to see whether that saves time or is more efficient to call the cab that way?
I suppose that they've studied it themselves. I don't happen to know what their results would be. But no, I mean, that's a good thing to ask about. You'd have to ask them. I don't actually know.
Mm. And of course, this follows, I guess you could change the dynamics of the whole city, right? Talk about unintended consequences. You're talking about taking 40% of the cabs off the road or something like that?
If that would be, yes, possibly. It could be like that. Now, I mean, another thing that I think we ought to discuss is that sometimes, as you suggested, people are going to feel uncomfortable riding cramped up against a stranger in the back seat. Many people's instinct is that they don't want to do this. On the other hand, psychologists have found this sort of surprising thing, that if you ask people how they feel after they've talked to a stranger, they often feel happier than they expected.
Yeah.
That is, and I don't know if it's because we put on a happy face when we talk to strangers and that makes us physiologically feel happier afterward, but it could be that it's not going to be quite as repulsive or unpleasant as people imagine it to be.
I remember when Washington, D.C. had a cab sharing when I used to live there, and it seemed to work out a little bit. It was a little bit inconvenient. But that's also when cabs were a dollar ride. But New Yorkers are used to sharing cabs in a pinch. When Sandy was here, we were sharing cabs. And I think you're right. When people are asked to in the city, they work together.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you go with your study from here? Anything else in the data you want to massage out of these studies?
Well, one thing that probably we ought to point out is that this issue of sharing, you know, there's all this talk about the shared economy now with like Airbnb, mm-hmm. people sharing their bedrooms, or at least their guest rooms, spare bedrooms. This issue of sharing transportation raises interesting math problems because you're now sharing something that moves, unlike a bedroom or a parking space. So this applies to sharing of bicycles, sharing of cars, you know, like Zipcar,
right.
where it's not taxis, but cars themselves. So we think there's a lot of potential application for shared mobility or transportation problems all around.
And, you know, it works in other cities around the world. Why couldn't it work in, you know, an American city?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, oh, sorry, my MIT colleagues, I should say, are also looking at this in cities of around the world, in Vienna and Singapore. And the hope is that and there's preliminary indication that there are some patterns that hold across cities of different sizes. And so if that turns out to be true, that you can compare one city to another by scaling up or down in the right way, it could be that we could figure out how to do this in cities of much smaller size than New York.
I think Portland, Oregon has sharing of stuff there already. They're pioneering that stuff. Thank you, Stephen, for taking time to be with us today. We'll keep track.
Okay, thanks, Ira.
We'll see what happens when we start calling our cabs.